tomorrow's news today.
The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. I'll be with you for the first 2 hours. Then Mike Adams, the Health Ranger, will be taking over the third hour, and then some guest hosts in the fourth hour as well. We've got some big breaking news to cover today. Just minutes ago, Donald Trump announces a ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel, with this Truth Post saying, quote, "I just had an excellent conversation with the highly respected President Joseph Ayoun of Lebanon and Prime Minister Bibi Netanyahu of Israel. These two leaders have agreed that in order to achieve peace between their countries, they will formally begin a 10-day ceasefire at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesday. The two countries met for the first time in 34 years here in Washington, D.C., with our great Secretary of State Marco Rubio. I have directed Vice President J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Rubio, together with the Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Dan Raisin Kane, to work with Israel and Lebanon to achieve a lasting peace. It has been my honor to solve 9 wars across the world, and this will be my 10th. So let's get it done, President Donald J. Trump." So this could be a big thing. It could be nothing. After all, ceasefires are a hell of a lot like a bacon cheeseburger. Hard to get one in the Middle East. Hard to get a real one in the Middle East, at least. And we know the ceasefire in Gaza has been an extended Israeli bombing campaign for a while. The ceasefire with Iran was supposed to include Lebanon, but Israel decided they didn't want it to. Now there's a ceasefire with Lebanon. The question is, does that include Hezbollah? Because that's who they're fighting. They're not really fighting the Lebanese army. The Lebanese army is kind of serving their interests, actually, withdrawing without a fight. It's Hezbollah that they're actually in combat with. So will Hezbollah accept the ceasefire negotiated by the Lebanese government, or will Israel continue to bomb quote-unquote Hezbollah positions, saying, well, we're not bombing Lebanon, we're just bombing Hezbollah. We're helping you. We're helping you deal with your terrorism problem by bombing entire neighborhoods. So this is good if it sticks, if it actually continues. I don't think it will. Again, we're dealing with some like certainties, and I've got plenty of videos talking about this because a lot of other people are now kind of waking up to this reality or expressing this to a greater degree. But it's always been the case that, and I don't know, people are probably just sick of hearing me say this, but it's worth reminding you in this context, the entire point of everything going on for the last 2 years in the Middle East was to take out Iran once and for all. That's the ultimate goal. They will not stop until they achieve that. If they stop before they achieve that, then they're dead. Everything is gone because they've spent the last 2.5 years carrying out a brutal campaign of ethnic cleansing and genocide. They know that they're going to lose support worldwide. They have to become a superpower right now. They have to become a global or a regional slash global superpower by defeating Iran right now, or else they're screwed. In 5 or 10 years, with support from America, will be withdrawn, and Israel cannot survive without America as its attack dog. So they're not going to stop. I don't know what this ceasefire portends or how it's going to turn out, or if Trump is actually taking Joe Kent's advice and putting restraint on Israel, as we could do anytime we wanted, if that is the American president wouldn't be like murdered by Israel for disagreeing with them. So as long as Trump can have the fortitude and confidence to restrain Israel a little bit here or there, then maybe this peace can last, and maybe the damage that's already been done from the Iran war can be as far as this damage goes. I doubt it, though. I seriously doubt it, because everything else is moving forward at a pace, including the lockdowns and restrictions and COVID 2.0 over this time. There's no choice, because they will just withhold food from you. We'll get into all of it here on the other side. Stay with us.
I'm holding in my hands 2 compounds that are guaranteed to change your life. T3, pure atomic iodine, nobody else has it, it's next level, and ultramethylene blue, medical grade methylene blue. These 2 products together supercharge the mitochondria of the cells, clean out the body, and are game changers. iodine is essential, meaning you die without it. The UN admits that most people that have cognitive disabilities is because of lack of iodine. You add ultramethylene blue to this, it supercharges everything. Ladies and gentlemen, T3 is now available at galaxystore.com. The very best iodine that we know of that exists. There may be better. We'll adopt that if we can. But this is the best for sale we found, and we have the best medical grade ultramethylene blue. Get yours now, right now. If you're a VIP member, for 50% off. Regular customers, 25% off. It funds the InfoWar, but more importantly, it is a game changer. If you don't take my advice and try this, you're insane. All you got to do is try it. You'll be blown away. Take action now. TheAlexandroStore.com to get T3, now available, and methylene blue at TheAlexandroStore.com.
Discover trends and global developments years before they happen, right here on The Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Please do follow us at InfoWars at Real Alex Jones. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. And please do share the links and get this information out, as I plan to cover just a ton of stuff that you're not going to see anywhere else on today's show. I'll be with you for the first 2 hours. Mike Adams will be taking over in the third hour. And then we've got some great guest hosts for the fourth hour as well. Remember to support us by going to thealexjonesstore.com. The news is so crazy these days. I can't even explain to you, as I'm doing my news gathering, there are entire like swaths, whole topics of discussion that's easy just to completely forget about. Could spend the entire show just talking about the very mysterious and coincidental rise in explosions and fires at oil refineries or food production plants the world over, starting about the time that we went to war in Iran. The latest is that Australia's top fertilizer input plant is now shut down for 2 months. The Yara plant shut down comes as a quarter of global ammonia trade for urea fertilizer and explosives is blocked. Australia's largest ammonia plant will be shut for 2 months to repair damage caused by a power outage amidst a global supply crunch for the vital fertilizer and explosives ingredient. And so Australia, of course, has been one of the hardest hit by the lockdown or the shutdown of the Strait of Hormuz in the Iran war. And just at a time when they need every, you know, ounce of fertilizer they can get, they have some sort of power outage that shuts down their most productive fertilizer plant for 2 whole months. There's also another refinery explosion in Australia yesterday. It's been a lot, and I could spend the entire show on that. But it's the type of thing that I'm looking at the Iran war, and that stuff fades out until suddenly it's like, oh, right, no, that's happening at an incredibly suspicious rate. Then you have stuff like this that no one's even talked about. I've seen mentioned one time on Twitter, so I went ahead and researched it. IU biology researcher pleads guilty to smuggling E. coli DNA from China concealed in clothing shipment. So yeah, it turns out another Chinese student was caught smuggling a pathogen into this country, gone totally unreported, totally unremarked, especially in context of Donald Trump welcoming 600,000 Chinese students as part of the trade deal with China. In exchange for getting them to give TikTok to Israel, we get to take 600,000 students, any one of which is a suspect, as far as I'm concerned, for bringing in biological material, which seems to happen on a pretty regular basis. Again, kind of a big deal. Like, what are we doing here exactly? The ones that were found by the Chinese students last year in the Chinese students' possession were like wheat blights that could wipe out our entire agriculture industry. E. coli is a dangerous pathogen. This isn't like some dude getting caught with a knife on an airplane. This is terrorists being caught with biological weapons. What are we doing exactly? Why is this just being treated so casually? This is from April 10th. It was like nearly a week ago. I haven't seen anybody talk about it once. In Indianapolis, Yu Huang Zhang, 32, formerly a postdoctoral researcher at Indiana University and a citizen of the People's Republic of China, has been sentenced to more than 4 months in prison, a $500 fine, and 1 year of supervised release after pleading guilty to smuggling biologic material into the United States from China. As part of Zhang's plea agreement with the government, Zhang also stipulated the entry of a judicial order of removal, which will result in his immediate removal from the United States to the People's Republic of China. He holds a PhD at from the Chinese Academy of Sciences. He applied for and received a U.S. non-immigrant student visa to perform postdoctoral research. According to court documents, in November 2025, the FBI's Indianapolis division began investigating suspicious shipments from China to individuals affiliated with Indiana University. During the investigation, FBI agents determined that Zhang had received a suspicious shipment from China at his Bloomington, Indiana residence in March 2024. The package in question originated from Guangzhou Sci-Fi Innovation Trading, and the shipping manifest declared that the package contained underwear of man-made fibers, other women's. Okay. Investigators found it unusual that Zhang was purchasing and shipping women's underwear from China, especially from a company focused on science and technological innovation. Okay. So if they'd been just like slightly more concerned with OPSEC. So like just instead of saying women's underwear, they'd written men's underwear. We would have never discovered this. We would have never looked into this. It was only because they're so unconcerned about being caught. They're so lackadaisical or casual about the, you know, cover story. And they're just like, yeah, whatever. Say it's like women's underwear or something. And the FBI just happens to be like, well, that's kind of strange. Let's look into it. Oh, look, it looks like they're smuggling E. coli into the country under the guise of sending clothes. But if they'd been just like, just monitors been like, instead of women's underwear, just say Pokemon cards. Just write Pokemon cards on the manifest instead. And the FBI would have been like, yep, Chinese student buying Pokemon cards, checks out, and just would have moved on. And God only knows what would have happened then or what else is happening around the country right now. Who's to say? Hundreds of thousands of Chinese students, any one of which could be smuggling biological material. It's not like we can watch all of them. Yeah, so we're being set up for total and unrelenting failure. And again, this is just like one story out of 10,000. They just go totally unremarked because there's so much other insanity going on. But there you go. At least we caught that guy. Good job, FBI. Good job, us. Way to go. Let's just stop letting in hundreds of thousands of hostile foreigners into our country. Could we do that, please? We're not doing that. In fact, we are being betrayed by the Republican Party, who have now voted to allow Haitians to remain forever, because apparently we have to. We'll get back into that story in just a little bit. But again, it's like, I don't even know. We'll keep going with the Lebanese ceasefire, since that's the big breaking story here. But I'm telling you, there is so much news, I'm having trouble figuring out where to even take it. But as we reported in the first 5 minutes, Donald Trump has announced a 10-day ceasefire between Lebanon and Israel. The two leaders of these countries have agreed, in order to achieve peace, they will formally begin a 10-day ceasefire at 5 p.m. Eastern. On Tuesday, the two countries met for the first time in 34 years here in D.C. with our great Secretary of State Marco Rubio. I've directed J.D. Vance and Secretary of State Rubio, together with Chairman of Joint Chiefs of Staff Dan Razen-Kane, to work with Israel and Lebanon to achieve a lasting peace. It's been my honor to solve 9 wars across the world, and this will be my 10th. So let's get it done, President Donald J. Trump. Quick rule here. Quick rule change for you. You don't get to take credit for stopping wars that you started. Okay. Theoretically, you claim that Israel and Lebanon wasn't a war started by Trump, but when you're arming one side, when you're starting a war with Iran to facilitate that war, I'm not so sure this is the feather in your cap that you think it is. And we'll see if it lasts. And of course, we'll see what Israel does with a couple hours of time to bomb as many people as they possibly can. I can't think of another reason why it'd be delayed until 5 p.m. Looks like there was another Truth Social post the crew just put up there. I don't know if y'all can throw that back up. It's an addition. So Trump says, in addition to the statement just issued, I will be inviting the Prime Minister of Israel, Bibi Netanyahu, and the President of Lebanon, Joseph Ayoun, to the White House for the first meaningful talks between Israel and Lebanon since 1983, a very long time. Both sides want to see peace, and I believe that will happen quickly. President Donald J. Trump. Kinda. I mean, one side wants peace. I mean, you're half right. You're halfway there. The other side wants to ethnically cleanse Lebanon, as they've wanted to for decades, and are just brutally and systematically abolishing all life in the bottom quarter of the Lebanese landmass. So I don't know if both sides do want peace. I don't think they actually do. And again, the complicated thing about this will be if Hezbollah decides to honor it, or if Israel decides that, well, we can still keep bombing Lebanon, it's just we're bombing Hezbollah targets. So as long as we claim that somebody in the vicinity of the bomb was almost certainly Hezbollah, then, you know, we're not breaking the ceasefire. We're just targeting the terrorists that we're both enemies with, right? They would say to Lebanon. But of course, I don't believe it. I don't trust it. I don't buy it. But that's just me. I mean, like I said, unless he actually is taking, Trump is actually taking Joe Kent's advice and restraining Israel. But I don't know if that's totally possible. From Alan Fisher, Lebanon ceasefire announced after Ayoun refused call with Netanyahu. Interesting. The Lebanese president had refused to get on the phone with Israeli's prime minister without a ceasefire. So it appears that a deal was agreed on both sides, and Trump decided to announce that. In a matter of hours, there should be a ceasefire in southern Lebanon, which Trump said he successfully brokered. It's clear that there have been talks in the Oval Office with both sides that have led to this announcement. What they're aiming for is to take it one step at a time. This is the first step, but clearly Ayoun felt that his call with Rubio, said that in his call with Rubio, he was not ready to entertain the possibility of a phone call to Netanyahu without a ceasefire in place. Interesting. All right. So, you know, it looks like some pressure being applied to Netanyahu. Of course, Netanyahu's in an increasingly tenuous political position. But of course, when they say both sides want peace, that's undercut just a bit by the extremely aggressive and not very peaceful statements from the likes of Benjamin Netanyahu and others. Let's go to clip number 29 here. This is Benjamin Netanyahu talking about a ceasefire with Lebanon and sort of dismissing the whole thing. Let's watch. So he says we have to stand firm. At the same time, our forces continue to strike Hezbollah. The fighting is focused on Bint Jabil. Bint Jabil was the capital of Hezbollah in southern Lebanon. This is the place where Hassan Nasrallah said 26 years ago, Israel is weaker than a spider web. We are about to take control of Bint Jabil. We are essentially about to eliminate the major Hezbollah stronghold. At the same time, yesterday I gave instructions to the IDF to continue reinforcing the security zone and also to extend it eastward to the slopes of Mount Hermon so that we can better assist our Druze brothers in times of distress. At the same time, we are conducting negotiations with Lebanon. These negotiations have not taken place over 40 years. They're happening now because we are very strong and nations are coming to us, and not just Lebanon, in the negotiations with Lebanon. There are two main objectives. First, the dismantling of Hezbollah, and second, a sustainable peace, peace through strength. And there is one more thing, of course. Our American friends are constantly updating us on their engagements with Iran. Our goals and those of the United States are aligned. We want to see enriched material removed from Iran. We want to see the cancellation of enrichment capabilities within Iran. And, of course, we want to see the opening of the straits. It is too early to say how this will end or even how it will progress. Therefore, in the event that fighting resumes, we are prepared for any scenario. Pentagon approaches. Yeah, so this is another story from yesterday. Pentagon approaches the automakers, manufacturers to boost weapons production. They're talking to GM, Ford, and others about shifting some capacity. So, again, it's like you look at what's being said, and it's like ceasefire. Yesterday, Trump's coming out saying, yeah, the war with Iran's like almost over. Meanwhile, massive amounts of troop movement into the Middle East, just huge air, you know, shipments, just military planes in an endless parade into the Middle East. As of today or yesterday, the last American-occupied base in Syria has now been handed over to the Syrian army. All of the American forces have left that base, remaining in the Middle East, preparing for perhaps a new mission of some sort. We're apparently reorganizing our entire industrial base to serve weapons manufacturers and war industries. Yeah, I don't think this is over. I don't think it's going to be over anytime soon. I think this is actually World War III. I think they intend for this to be World War III. And it doesn't matter if you don't want it. It doesn't matter if it's bad for the world. It doesn't matter. They're doing it. They're doing it because they want to do it and because you won't stop them. So you can ask them, they'll ignore you. You can beg them, they'll laugh at you. You can protest, And they'll maybe pretend to listen out, you know, to your complaints. And they may even commiserate with you and have empathy and say, look, I understand. But at the end of the day, we're doing this. We're going to World War III because it's our plan, because we've been preparing for this for literally centuries. And this is the culmination of a very long-held plan to establish a one-world government by first slaughtering all the free-thinking people in a gigantic, devastating war that's so bad that all of humanity simply begs for a savior that we will provide in the form of the Antichrist. Like, that's their plan. That's what they're going to do. They're going to do it. Like, we can stop. We can stand up to them. We can stop them. We can identify the people pushing us towards this and throw them in prison. Like, we could do that if we can identify and recognize this intelligence, this information that would inspire action. But until we can get that going, I guess we're just going to go to World War III. I guess we're just going to let them take us to World War III, that is. And the way they talk about this is so sort of offensive and in your face. Wondering how far to go with this. Let's go to clip number 25 here, because this is Alan Dershowitz, well-known Epstein confidant. He was Epstein's lawyer. He did get massages from young women at Epstein's estates, but he kept his underwear on, according to him. So, you know, I mean, Alan Dershowitz, if there's one face you can trust, I mean, that's it. The man's practically a saint, as far as I'm concerned. Here he is talking to somebody about the way in which Israel and whatever this Jewish super government is that Alan Dershowitz is a key functionary of, how they plan on basically manipulating and handling Trump. And they're just saying this out in the open. It's completely insane. Let's watch.
The goals of the United States and Israel are different when it comes to Iran. And we see that in Lebanon, where Israel's feeling pressure from the president to tone down its attacks. And the truth is as much as you attack Hamas, Hezbollah, Iran, they're still around. That's the problem. It's very hard to defeat them. But on the other hand, what other choices do we really have? That's really the dilemma.
We have to continue to fight. Hashem oz li'am oyitein. We have to remember that the Jews get shalom only through oz. And so Bibi has to continue to fight, even if it means confrontation with President Trump. Leave that to Americans. We will take care of President Trump. You know, I met with him over Hanukkah, spent a half an hour or so with him.
Let's just pause it real quick. Let's just figure out what the hell he just said. So Alan Dershowitz, ostensibly an American, is sitting there going, look, the president of Israel has to continue fighting, even though they recognize, even though they're like, hey, look, we've done all this fighting. These groups still exist. We cannot defeat them by fighting, because the more we fight them, the more massacres we commit against innocent people, the more terrorists we create. So, I mean, they recognize, they know, they're like, we're in a system of endless fighting with no possible end. It's a feedback loop that we have created, that we continually generate energy into. And we're not, and there's no way out. There's no way to get off the tiger. You got to ride the tiger, right? And here's an American saying, yeah, you know, the president of Israel has to continue to wage war, even if it causes confrontation with the American president. In other words, even if it's bad for America, Alan Dershowitz is saying Benjamin Netanyahu should continue to fight, and you leave Donald Trump to us. We'll handle him. He literally said that. We'll handle Donald Trump. So here's a supposed American collaborating with a foreign power saying, you do what's right for the foreign power, even if it hurts America, we will handle the American president and allow America to be damaged for the sake of our real homeland, Israel. Okay, all of these people need to be deported or imprisoned or like jailed for treason. This is treason that they're openly discussing, like bragging about. So let's back it up about 15 seconds. And just here again, as Alan Dershowitz, Epstein confidant, old despicable pervert, talks about handling Trump. You leave that to us. The Jewish cabal surrounding and engulfing Donald Trump will handle him effectively so that Benjamin Netanyahu can wage a silent war against America and American interests as long as we keep Donald Trump firmly tied by our puppet strings. This is what he's saying, okay? If you don't like this, take it up with him. Let's watch.
we have to continue to fight. Hashem Oz Liam Oyitain. We have to remember that the Jews get shalom only through Oz. And so Bibi has to continue to fight, even if it means confrontation with President Trump. Leave that to Americans. We will take care of President Trump. You know, I met with him over Hanukkah, spent a half an hour or so with him in the Oval Office talking about Iran. He was very receptive. And I know that Miriam Adelson talks to him from time to time. I talk to other members of the administration from time to time. There's a lot of support for Israel within the administration, but you know, it's moderated by the fact that, as you say, America has a slightly different interest.
Do you hear what he just said? Do you understand what he just said? There's plenty of support for Israel in the American administration, but as you just said, you know, sometimes there's different. What he's saying is, yeah, everybody in the administration wants to do whatever we ask, whatever Israel asks, only they're constrained, they're hamstrung by the fact that what we want is bad for America. But they'll overcome that with their, you know, blackmail or, you know, whatever. I mean, is it a surprise now that the Epstein files didn't come out? They've got Alan Dershowitz's name all over it. He's probably the one they're protecting, amongst others. So this when you talk about the Epstein class, this is who we're talking about. We're talking about his literal best friends and lawyers who are still to this day surrounding Trump like a swarm of worm tongues, pouring poison into his ear and knowing deliberately, like knowing full well and explicitly that they are disadvantaging America for the sake of the country that they actually love. Oh, but if you say they have dual loyalty, you're an anti-Semite. And you need to have your life destroyed, and you should not be able to have jobs anymore, and you should be kicked off the internet, and you can't perform in England anymore, Kanye. So I found that to be one of the most amazing and despicable and hateful and like jaw-dropping videos I've ever seen of Alan Dershowitz admitting that he was encouraging Benjamin Netanyahu to do things that hurt America, but that he and Miriam Adelson and the rest of their elite Jewish billionaire Epstein, you know, friend group, the top eight on Epstein's MySpace, all get to, you know, surround Trump and convince him to allow Israel to hurt America. And, you know, he says, look, the problem with this, you know, there's a lot of people that want to do what's right for Israel. There's just this issue that they're supposed to be doing what's right for America, and this is just totally bad for America. So, but we'll overcome that with trickery and rhetoric. Great. Well done. I think I've identified the problem. I think I've figured it out. It turns out there is just one source. Isn't that crazy? It's like people always say, it's like, well, the world's all complicated and you're just looking for a simple answer. That's why you like conspiracy theories. Or it's because it's literally all them. It could be one of the, like, I agree. It's one of these two things. Either it's just like convenient things. I'm as you may know, you may know this. I'm very low IQ. I need it simplified. I need it all very easy to understand. When you come in with all these complicated various influences and considerations that people have, give it to me simple. It's Alan Dershowitz and all of Epstein's best friends, isn't it? Is that it? I can understand that. I'm low IQ after all. So I need it very simply explained to me. Why? Why are we allowing Epstein's best friends to get us into war that they know is bad for America but good for Israel because that's their real homeland and loyalty? Why are we allowing these people to even exist in our country anymore? I don't know. I'm too low IQ. I can't figure it out. What could it possibly be?
My people perish for lack of knowledge. That's what the Bible tells us. Another way to say it is, those that don't know history are doomed to repeat it. God has given us compounds in nature that aren't just important, they're vital, they're essential. If you don't have oxygen for 4 minutes, you die. You don't have water for 4 or 5 days, you die. You don't have food for a month, you die. And why is that? Because there's nutrients in the food you need that are essential. Well, iodine is one of the essential nutrients. We have massive shortages of it in our depleted soils. Now, I have a new CIA declassified document I'm going to hit here in just a moment. But first, I want to show you a few headlines. UN study, 2 billion people suffer from vitamin mineral deficiencies, particularly iodine, the number one cause of cognitive disabilities in the world today. Here's another one. Salt smarts how iodine has increased America's IQs. Starting in the 20s, we had super low IQs like iodine. They put it in 15, 20 point increase. My point is, this is a known fact. It just got declassified 2 weeks ago, CIA Operation Artichoke in the 50s. They said, we've been tasked by the big tax-free foundations, the Rockefellers and Carnegies, to dumb down the American people. And we're going to put poisons in the food, the water, and the vaccines to dumb them down to make them more manageable. Absolutely incredible. So right here, ladies and gentlemen, I have taken a few drops of our new T3, even better than X2, pure atomic iodine, and mixed it with our medical-grade methylene blue. Both of these supercharge your cells, clean out your body, and counter the effects of the things now being admitted by the CIA. That fluoride calcifies the pineal gland and jackets your cells where they cannot transmit. And I've been telling you this for decades. So they have major studies, but now here it is. CIA declassified research. The human body is a liquid crystal that is literally transmitting and receiving a transceiver. And what does fluoride do? It literally blocks that. What goes in and strips that out? Iodine and methylene blue, they act in different ways. So this is information that the bad guys not want you to know. Also in the CIA document, they admit that most cancer is microscopic worms. There's hundreds of species that get in and colonize your body, amoebas, and eat your breast, your liver, your brain, you name it. And then they call it a tumor and cancer when they're just areas of your body that have been chewed out. Now, you've seen us with countless doctors and scientists on talking about this. Not all cancer is this, but the majority of it from studies is, and they are again telling you that you just got to die. And if you've got an infection of parasites in your brain or whatever, if they hit it with radiation, it kills the parasites. But the radiation also kills your regular cells. Turns out the majority of people in the world have one form or another of parasite. Here's the Daily Mail. CIA faces furious backlash after a hidden document. The potential cure for cancer is declassified after 60 years. We've talked about this for many, many years. We are totally vindicated again. And right now, we finally have the original pure iodine back, but even stronger, now known as T3. The original X2, but even better, at thealexjonesstore.com. Again, ladies and gentlemen, T3 and what it does for your body is amazing. So for a limited time, you can get T3, our new iodine, the very best ever, at thealexjonesstore.com if you're a VIP member for 50% off, regular customers 25% off at thealexjonesstore.com. It funds the operation, total win-win. Now, methylene blue, you fill in 30 minutes on average. Iodine takes about 2 weeks to kick in to get the full effect, but it is just as amazing. You are insane if you don't go to thealexjonesstore.com right now and get our ultramethylene blue and the new T3 that's even better than the next two, the same formula but stronger. Exclusively available right now at thealexjonesstore.com. And I thank you so much for your support.
Leading a frontal assault on the lies of the New World Order, it's Alex Jones.
You thought the leaden winter would bring you down forever, but you rode upon a steamer to the violence of the sun.
Broadcasting live from the UN stronghold, Austin, Texas, you're listening to The Alex Jones Show.
And the colors of the sea find
your... Our inbox is flooded with Americans saying they don't watch the news. They listen to our songs instead. Let's keep it 100 and talk reality. 5,000 years of Persian soul, of poetry and light. You sold nuclear threat to every camera in sight. But our leader said nukes are haram on record clear.
All right, welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is The Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. You know, I don't just want to say it over and over. It's not even bragging, necessarily, but we do say on The War Room quite often, another appropriate name would be the We Told You Show. Welcome back to the We Told You Show, because we just keep getting proved right about everything over and over. The latest is that young girl in Dundee, Scotland, who was on camera with an axe and a knife. And, you know, to us, it was pretty obvious right away. It was like, okay, why would a 12-year-old girl be brandishing a knife and an axe saying she's protecting her younger sister? We believe her. We think she's the innocent person here. and that she's a victim. Of course, she gets arrested, and the mainstream media comes out saying, well, you know, this is it's actually typical of Scottish people to be in gangs when they're young. And this, and of course, now it's in court, and it's come out that the dude was trying to basically kidnap or groom her and her sister, and she was actually defending herself against a hostile, perverted foreigner. So, okay, we were right about that, but it wasn't very hard to figure out. But then again, none of this is very hard to figure out. And I say this because if there's, yeah, here's the famous viral clip that, again, shocking to me that anybody would, you know, be confused at what was actually going on here. But now it's been revealed in court that we were exactly right and that she was the innocent one, as always. Because it's just, you just go with what's obvious. I mean, all of this is just unbelievably obvious, I would think. But that being said, if you've watched The American Journal and then The War Room, as I've been hosting them for the last 6 years or so, I've constantly made Lebanon a central feature of our Middle East coverage, even though it, before very recently, was hardly ever remarked upon. You're way more likely to hear a lot about Syria, a lot about Iran, a lot about Palestine and Gaza and all these other places. But there was always this sort of unspoken elephant in the room. And it was Hezbollah, and it was Lebanon. And once you start seeing things from the perspective of Lebanon, like if you are explained the Middle East situation from somebody who lives in Lebanon, a Lebanese Christian especially, everything makes perfect sense. It all becomes perfectly clear what's going on, especially if you look at the Lebanese Civil War and the conflicts in the early 80s that gave rise to Hezbollah. Like, it all actually starts to make perfect sense, the different factions that arise, who's helping who, how you've got the Israelis on the side of the radical Muslim extremists, where the Shiites and the Christians are teaming up, but the Catholics kind of flip-flop here or there. It gives you really interesting insight. And so I feel like we're constantly being validated, especially because I do a show called Moonbase. My friend Lebanon John, he goes by Lebanon John for a reason, right? His parents are from Lebanon, grew up in America. We were in the same classroom when the planes hit the towers in 9/11. And ever since then, I got a unique perspective from him. Helped red pill me at the tender age of 11 to understand, like, oh, okay, I see who the bad guys are in the Middle East. It's actually not all that complicated. It's not this, like, intractable realm of chaos where just, like, endless feuds continue forever. It's like, no, there's actually very identifiable political motives. The characters, you know, acting in this play are identifiable. Their motives are not, you know, hard to figure out. It's all actually fairly simple. It's just brutal and horrific. So I was asking him about, and the thing that Benjamin Netanyahu said about the spider web. If you were listening to War Room a couple weeks ago when Lebanon John called in, he talked about this spider web thing and said, if you see Israel mentioning spider web, this is what it means. So I don't have the exact story remembered precisely, but essentially Israel captured this area a long time ago. This may have been in the 2000s and said, you know, Hezbollah fell into our spider web. Then Hezbollah did a counterattack, completely wiped out the Israeli forces, forced them out, defeated them in this war, and responded saying they were as weak as a spider web. We broke them like one would break a spider web. So, like, this symbolism that they're talking about, this is like stuck in the Israeli mind. It has been like psychologically torturous for them, knowing that their own insult was turned around and they were mocked. Their weakness was, you know, celebrated by Hezbollah. So it's just one of those things that if you're watching War Room, if you're following Lebanon John, it's like you're constantly understanding things in a way that the vast majority of Americans have no idea. They're like, spiderweb, what the hell is he talking about? This is why this is happening. What's happening in Lebanon is not a reaction to Hezbollah attacks. It's not a continuation of the war in Gaza. It's a continuation of an ongoing war that has been waged against Lebanon for the last 40 years or so by Israel. And there's just different flare-ups and low points and high points, but this is like nothing new, and it's not going to end right now. So it's just, it's that type of thing that you go, okay, everything he said in the past has come to fruition. I think I'll listen to him now about what happened in the future. That seems reasonable to me. No, it's just funny because we'll be just right predicting everything and people can see that and will acknowledge that, and then just be like, but you're totally wrong about what's going to happen next. And it's like, okay, all right, fine. You keep saying that and we keep being right, but fine, believe whatever you want. So this was the, I asked him for some input into the ceasefire. It's pretty simple. He says, basically, the United States needs time to be ready for round two, which has got to be more crazy. And the only way Iran is going to give them more time to prepare is if they lay off Lebanon for a little bit. But round two is coming and it's going to be way crazier. And I tend to agree. That is certainly the vibe that I get. Again, with all of the weapons and all of the personnel moving to the Middle East, the closing of Syrian bases to reallocate those resources to a forward position. Yeah, I don't think it's over by a long shot. And it's also been all but confirmed that the supposed pilot rescue a couple weeks ago, last week, whenever it was probably cover for sort of a last-ditch effort to seize the uranium and end the war on a high note that way. But that failed, so now we're backing down, doing a little ceasefire, give us time to prepare, give Israel time to sort of repair itself. Because Iran said, look, when this 2 weeks ceasefire is up, we're going right back at it unless we have an agreement. And so America and Israel are trying to forestall that, forestall that as much as humanly possible. Syrian army takes control of last U.S. base in country as al-Shara tightens grip. And then we've got a lot of stuff like this. Senate rejects fourth attempt to curb Trump's war powers in Iran. On Wednesday, the Republican-led Senate voted 52-47 to block a war powers resolution that would have forced withdrawal of U.S. forces from hostilities with Iran absent congressional authorization. So, you know, this is what I mean when you've got, you know, we can blame this on Trump, but Congress and the Senate are totally abdicating their responsibility to actually declare war. That's their prerogative. They have to assert it. They have to be the ones to say, hey, President, you're not allowed to go to war without our approval. They're not doing that. They're happy to let Trump basically wage this alone and take the blame alone. But really, it's their fault that this is happening as much as his, because they have the ability to prevent it and they're choosing not to. The real problem with this, of course, is that the shortages that are being created by the war in Iran are deliberate and being taken advantage of, getting worse, and no sign of ending. Europe could run out of jet fuel within weeks, IEA warns. Airlines risk imminent collapse as Trump's war spikes fuel cost. And the UK prepares for food shortages in worst-case scenario as Iran war continues. The U.S. could face food shortages, including chicken and pork, by the summer if the Iran war continues in a worst-case scenario drawn up by government officials. A government source told the BBC it was planning for a scenario which would involve the continued closure of the Strait of Hormuz and breakdowns in the supply of carbon dioxide. CO2 is used in the slaughter of some animals and in food preservation. A spokesman for the Department of Environment, Food, and Rural Affairs said it would continue to work closely with businesses to tackle the impact of the war. But this is what we've been warning about forever. This was sort of a practice run. I mean, how many times have we heard the people who did COVID to us, who did the lockdowns and everything? I mean, they've said explicitly that it was a test run, that it was a, you know, testing process to determine how the world and Americans in particular would respond to forced lockdowns, you know, limitations in their activity, restrictions to their liberty on the basis of invisible threats that only exist on TV. It was always a test, and this is the fulfillment of that plan, of that test. And how many times during COVID did you hear something along the lines of, I got sick because you're not vaccinated? And how much more dangerous and scary is the idea, I'm starving because you have food? And that's certainly where we're going. And with all of the problems in the UK that already exist, what do you think happens when food starts to get rationed? And do you think the native Brits will be prioritized by their government? I mean, it's their government, it's their civilization, spent thousands of years building up this very robust society that actually can plan for the future and store food in the case of, you know, famine, and, you know, do all of these preparatory things as a consequence of the higher level of civilization they enjoy. Are they going to, you know, be rewarded and experience the positive consequences of that preparation? Or is all of it going to be given two Africans who arrived last week and brought nothing with them and are just there to steal things. What do you think would happen? I mean, right now, if you saw the UK government, who do you think would be prioritized if it came to a limitation of food on that island? I mean, things could get really crazy really fast, and they kind of are. Let's go to clip 24 here. As we mentioned, Australia has been one of the hardest hit by the closure of the Strait of Hormuz. And now, very coincidentally, they've had their biggest fertilizer plant taken down and out of commission for 2 months in this all-important time period. And they're trying to put a good face on it. The Prime Minister here, Albanese, is celebrating the huge shipment of diesel diesel fuel they received. This is being celebrated and treated as a temporary fix to the supply problem. Let's watch clip 24 now.
My government has secured an additional 100 million litres of diesel from two shipments, one from Brunei, where I was yesterday, and one from South Korea. This is the first of many expected shipments secured under the government's new strategic reserve powers with the support of Export Finance Australia.
Okay, so there he is celebrating the 100 million litres of diesel secured from Brunei and other places. Here's the problem. Australia uses 92 million gallons or litres of diesel a day. So what he's celebrating there is a little over 1 day of diesel fuel usage in Australia. And yet he's celebrating that as if it's a major achievement. That's a very big issue. Now, again, places like China don't have this issue because they didn't fall for the climate change scam. They actually still harvest and use coal, and they get their urea, the fertilizer, nitrogen-rich fertilizer, from their coal deposits. So they're not, you know, stressing about the lack of fertilizer. Western countries are. And, of course, the Dutch farmer protests over the last couple of years have all been about the limitation of nitrogen in the soil as they deliberately shut down some of the most, you know, productive and bountiful places like the Netherlands, which is the like second biggest food exporter in the world, despite being such a tiny country. And so, of course, they have to be targeted for destruction. Let's go to clip number three here. This is the International Energy Agency chief warning about what's coming down the pipe if fuel for jets doesn't get back online.
Breaking news to bring you now. This is from the IEA chief, the International Energy Agency chief, Fatih Birol, saying that Europe has maybe 6 weeks or so of jet fuel left, warning of possible flight cancellations soon. This is being reported by the AP news agency, saying these comments coming to us from Paris. So Fatih Birol, the International Energy Agency chief, saying that Europe has maybe 6 or so weeks of jet fuel left, warning of possible flight cancellations soon. We've, of course, heard similar warnings from the boss of Europe's biggest airline, Ryanair, in previous weeks as well, talking about potential disruption through the course of the early summer. Well, as we approach mid-April, that would align with about June, according to these warnings from Fatih Birol, the IEA chief, saying that Europe has 6 weeks or so of jet fuel left, warning of possible flight cancellation soon. I'm sure the markets will be watching very closely the outcome of any potential talks between the US and Iran, suggestions the two sides sitting down again next week. But for the moment, looking at maritime tracking data right now live, it's showing a pretty bleak scene across the Strait of Hormuz, where so much of the world's fuel and oil passes, very little activity, certainly no tankers passing through that strait.
So there you go. Again, the shortages are not a, you know, unfortunate side effect of this. In my opinion, it's central to the whole reason that we're attacking Iran in the first place. Now I want to go to a video. It's a little bit longer, but I was going to go through and play some of these clips anyway of J.D. Vance at this TPUSA event that was basically empty. As unfortunate as that is, Erica Kirk was supposed to speak there and canceled, apparently due to credible death threats, even though the Secret Service obviously is going to have the entire place on lockdown. So that's very suspicious. So this guy, I believe this is Eric Moutsos. Clip number 34 here. He asked, did TPUSA die with Charlie? So again, it's a bit of a longer video, but I think he makes some good points. And then he shows the clips of J.D. Vance that I was going to show anyway. So here's a little breakdown of the trouble that the Republican Party is in. Let's watch.
Did Turning Point USA die with Charlie? I think most of us knew it was going to happen. Is it happening sooner than we thought? You see this stadium in Atlanta? It's supposed to hold 8,000 people. So let me ask you, how many people do you think came with headliner J.D. Vance, the guy that's supposed to be the next president of the United States? How many people came Turning Point USA event with J.D. Vance? How many do you think? This is about 8 minutes until they started the event. And this is when J.D. Vance spoke.
It doesn't bother me when he speaks on issues of the day, frankly, even when I disagree with how he's applying particular principles. So the most obvious example is...
So let's hear a few of the questions that were asked to him.
President Trump multiple times called the files a hoax. The acting attorney general said Epstein shouldn't be a part of anything at the DOJ. If there are compromised government officials in those files, how can the public trust that this administration will hold anyone accountable when its own Justice Department is actively blocking the investigation? Given that, can you clearly articulate your stance on whether federal entities should have a formal investigation? Thank you.
Yeah. So... So first of all, you said the associate attorney general or something. I haven't seen that quote, but here's my view on the Epstein matter. Number one, the guy was clearly a scumbag. Okay. Number two, he clearly had extraordinary connections both with intelligence services, both inside the United States and outside the United States, and also with a lot of very wealthy and powerful people. Okay. Number three, I have been a firm advocate and will continue to be a firm advocate of where we have something. And you know, like, I'm probably more obsessed with this than most officials, okay? Probably more obsessed with this than most people even in this room, is when you see somebody who says something in an email that suggests, you know, there's one email I read, and it's been a little while ago, but it was talking about, you know, one person sent an email to Jeffrey Epstein saying, oh, there were some really nice, like, pizzas and grape sodas or something like that. And I remember it sounded like the Pizzagate conspiracy theory, but here it was in like an email from a guy. And my reaction to that was, we should absolutely investigate that person, okay? And, you know, you remind me, I'm going to follow up on that to see whether we've investigated that person, because we should. We absolutely should. When you see evidence of sexual assault, sexual misconduct, regardless of whether you're powerful or not, in fact, you should probably investigate it more if you're a powerful person, right? I don't want powerful people, you know, being involved in this disgusting behavior. But I have to defend the president on this, because when he said that it was a hoax, what he was talking about was this Democratic idea that he's connected to Epstein. If you look at those emails, it's like, you know, they were in the same, you know, everybody in Palm Beach knew everybody, okay? Like, the president has said he knew Jeffrey Epstein and he was a scumbag.
Listen what this person yelled out.
I certainly think the answer is yes, and I agree. Jesus Christ certainly does not support genocide, whoever yelled that out from the dark. He certainly does not. I think that's pretty easy. I think that's a pretty easy principle. Okay, so here's a guy, let me just say this. This is a guy.
Now here's J.D. Vance gaslighting everybody about the wars in the Middle East they promised not to do. It's just one topic that we can just disagree with and move on in full confidence in this administration.
Issues, like for example, I recognize that a lot of young voters don't love the policy that we have in the Middle East. Okay, I understand that. I also know that we've secured the border. We've lowered housing prices now for 8 months in a row, and there's going to be more to come beyond that. We've made America energy dominant, which has lowered electricity costs and things like that. We've made it so that we have the lowest murder rate in 127 years. I'm not saying you have to agree with me on every issue. I'm not saying you have to agree with me on every issue. What I'm saying is, don't get disengaged because you disagree with the administration on one topic.
See, I'll take us out right here. This is what frustrates me. It's like I was thinking about this. I was trying to come up with a metaphor. I think this could actually be a successful like sitcom, because what I'm picturing is like J.D. Vance has been put in charge of a fort. See, there's this fort that the enemy had, and we spent 4 years in brutal trench warfare with very little hope of victory. But after 4 years of just brutal fighting and catastrophic losses, we actually finally took the fort. And we took the fort, and we knew that we had four years to get it prepared for the next assault. We know the Democrats are coming. The enemy forces are coming. We got 4 years to get the fort ready and to refortify it. And so it's like, all right, this year we got to rebuild the walls. We got to dig the moat. So next year we can fill the moat in and we can start putting the armaments on the walls. It's like, we got to get things in place because we got 4 years to get ready or we're all going to die. And so you come back a year later and you're like, all right, how we doing on the preparations? You know, they're coming in 4 years, maybe sooner. So like, where are we at? And they're like, oh, we're doing great. We, toilet upstairs flushes now. So we got that going. We're working on getting the rats out of the basement. They are still there, but there are less of them coming in. Okay. We've resawed the lawn. So it looks really nice. And it's like, no, where are the fortifications? Where is the preparation? What are we doing here? Where's all the people? Where's all the soldiers? They're like, oh, we sent them over there to deal with we're doing a favor for our friend, our greatest ally, Israel. We're going and doing some errands for them right now. Do we need those guys? Like, yeah, we need those guys. Why are we doing favor? Who told you? And it's like, that guy over there. And it's Mark Levin, and he's like putting explosives under the wall. And it's like, sorry. Yes. Hi. Thank you for that. Thank you for doing that. And it's like, well, that guy's clearly, he's sabotaging us. He's clearly on the side of the bad guys. Why are we doing this? I feel like you could do like an hour show just sort of in a giant metaphor for everything that we're doing wrong. So I don't care about any of that stuff. It doesn't matter. I don't care if the toilet flushes. We're all going to be burned alive. Like, what are you talking about? What are you talking about? Why would we be happy or satisfied with these incremental moderate gains? We're fighting a life and death battle for the future of our nation, and you're not taking it seriously enough. So we're not going to be satisfied with the minor improvements to the fort. We need total war so that we survive the next round of Democrat insanity, and you people are not doing it, and you're telling us to calm down and trust the plan. We're not going to calm down and trust the plan. You do it, or things are going to get insane. What do you not understand about this?
In a world where globalists, depopulationists, principalities, and powers of the air have been adding, spraying, and inundating humans with heavy metals, chemicals, and toxins, TheAlexJonesStore.com would like to introduce a new way to remove them from your body from the inside out. Introducing zeolite. Zeolites are a group of crystal-like porous minerals that are found where molten stone meets water. From the Greek zeo, to boil, and lithos, or light, meaning stone, this unique network of tiny little holes and channels found in zeolite absorb and remove harmful substances like heavy metals, chemicals, and other toxins. So don't delay. Start the process of removing unwanted toxins from your body and put some skin in the game of the info war today by going to TheAlexJonesStore.com and picking up a bottle of zeolite.
Whatever the future may hold, InfoWars will always live forever. The fight will continue. Be sure to follow us on X at RealAlexJones and at AJNLive. And now you can download the number one news app in the world. Go to AlexJonesApp.com and let the Democrat Deep State Party know that we will never be silenced.